it matter?
Okay, so this is a discussion, and I've only been to one discussion. It was on the role of quench disorder, and basically John Toner gave a talk on the blackboard, and he was interrupted a couple of times. I think I would like this to be really a discussion, so I'm not going to give a talk on the blackboard. And if I have to, I will even point at people and basically invite people to contribute, those who I know have done something relevant, basically. And Suropriya has been kind enough to agree to take notes so that we can put it on the website under challenging questions. Okay? So really the idea is about treating phase as a dynamical variable, or rather internal phase, and basically there's two sides to this story. One is that we know that many active agents have internal phase. So for example, if you look at E. coli or bacteria that have flagella and they are so-called pushers by basically on average creating a force dipole, let's say F and minus F. Essentially what E. coli does in reality is turning this helix around, and because of the handedness of the helix, there's chirality here. Basically, this object will have, so each component, this is an object made of two rigid parts, so parts, the head and the flagellum. Each of them will have translational velocity, angular velocity, and a force and a torque that basically they experience from interaction with the fluid and the other one. And if you solve the equation of force balance and torque balance, throwing away inertia, basically what you get is that the torque that is exchanged between the two at this point will mean that the two of them can move with the same velocity while effectively a force dipole like that is exerted on the fluid. Now, if you go far enough from this, you will basically observe the flow field of a force dipole. But in reality, there's a phase degree of freedom which can adjust, and that will basically be important if you have, let's say, two of them interacting very close to each other and having this phase degree of freedom, which is something like a rotor which is basically pushed around a closed trajectory with a constant torque. It has to adjust itself to find its value for the actual phase as a function of time, so let's call it phi, which will be the phase that this helix has. If you look at other examples, for example, a puller, Chlamydomonas, that has another stroke cycle. It basically has something that resembles motion, which is slightly, so the cilium will be slightly more extended when it goes from top to bottom, and then when it returns, it will be slightly contracted, as if it is going on a trajectory which looks like that. Effectively, if you assign some kind of center of friction to this structure, and it's important to break the symmetry of going basically on one point in the forward half of the stroke with respect to the second, the return or half of the stroke, such that you basically break the time reversal symmetry in a way that you can get swimming. So anyway, if you resolve on average, what you get from this is going to be, this was shown in Enkeleido's talk, you're going to be on average a force structure like that. So it has, if you look at it, averaging over the cross section, it will have a net dipole which basically pulls on the fluid on average, depends how you look at it or if you average it over this axis, you basically get the force quadrupole. And that's going to affect the flow field when you're seeing it from outside. On average, when you do the time averaging, when you have one of these, say, interacting with another one or interacting with a boundary or anything, like that, in reality, the phase degree of freedom is going to affect the dynamics. So still, this dynamical variable phi.
So when you say phase, right, what you first need some kind of water parameter for something which would be probably the rotation of this flagellum or something, right? And then
okay, so you are talking about building
phase
a theory
inside
with
of a cosine or a sine or if it's a phase, right, it's inside of some periodic function.
Yes, exactly. So for example, here you can parameterize the shape of the cilium, okay, and that will have some geometrical characteristics which will have
a dependence on that phase.
It will depend on that phase. So if I'm, you know, in the beginning of the cycle or towards the half of it or towards the end of it, that will characterize. Now, how quickly I go through that cycle will depend on the dynamics of this variable. So I need to write an equation for phi dot and then relate it to other things which will have phi in them. And then that will give me a dynamical equation for a phase variable, right? If I have more than one of them, they could synchronize.
It's important that this function phi of t is goes from 0 to 2 pi.
So it will have to be a phase.
So
yes. So
just a phase.
For this building, I think it's appropriate
kinds of things, right?
To describe it as a member of this group. So yes. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. So do interrupt me like that. I was just building up the sort of microscopic idea where we will see this variable, at least when we're dealing with these active agents. Now, these are both swimmers, which means that they operate under the constraint of being force-free and torque-free. There are other examples of hydrodynamically active agents or organelles that are involved in fluid transport. So this is, let's say, a layer of cilia. And then you will have beating of these cilia going on trajectories that will have. So if you focus on a single one of them, let's say it will have a power stroke, which is farther away from the surface. And then it will have a recovery stroke, which is closer to the surface. And it goes out of plane and sort of goes back in a relatively shy way, and then completes the cycle. So there will be some kind of three-dimensional orbit on which this effective center of friction, or basically location of the object that you describe, if you don't want to think about the whole elaborate elastic structure, it moves around this kind of trajectory, so like that, and then like that, so as if you're participating in a demonstration against the government or something, and you're giving angry slogans. So that is a cyclic motion. It will have a phase phi. And then if you have an array of that, like we have in our lungs, then these will actuate presumably independently by some biochemical circuitry, which is undergoing down here. And then somehow they choose to synchronize and do this thing, the cyclic thing, together. Ananya?
So they're doing this in 3D, right? So this is.
So they're doing this in 3D. Yes.
This will not be a U1, this will be an SO3, right?
This will still be a U1 under some conditions. So that's a good question. Let's get back to that. So maybe we can make a list of the questions once I finish basically setting up the problem. So first, I don't know if we had another one, but is it always U1? Let's use the appropriate language for the location.
We have the degrees of freedom just follow the face, which is very bad.
Or higher groups. Okay, I'm not going to put the bigger one. It depends on how many angles do you choose.
But for the moment, it cannot be just.
Okay, that's. Yes, that is true. So in reality, that is true. The Chlamydomonas cilium cannot exactly be contained in one plane. If you have a top view of this alga, it would basically So what I've drawn here gives you the impression of something like that, but in reality, it's something like that. And this causes a slower axial spinning of the algae, which is, well, it must have some use for its life. And some people think that it has to do with the fact that Chlamydomonas is phototaxis. It needs light. And the way it uses light is basically using an eye spot, which interestingly is located here. And there's only one of them. So this is basically something like a radar, if you want. It's rotating like that at a slow frequency.
Is that are the internal variables fixed in the body of this or not? I mean, this is something which is this kind of motion, is that an internal variable?
So this kind of motion is on average. So on average, what Chlamydomonas does is this kind of beating, which basically rotates like that very slowly. So let's say at a frequency which is tens of times or maybe hundreds of times smaller than the beating frequency. So it does this very slow scanning of the different orientations, presumably such that the eye spot gets to see where light is coming from and adjust its navigation. So that's a separate question to enter. Okay, so basically, the story here is that I'll have now an array of these cilia, and presumably, when they synchronize, they communicate somehow over large lung scales. So, say, in our lungs, our cilia are constantly beating, shifting around mucus, and you know, you can basically measure distances up to many, many centimeters in which these things are synchronized, and they act in a coordinated way. So in this system, we don't have the constraint of force-free condition like we have with the swimmers. They are tied to the background, which means that they can basically tolerate the net force, or they pass on the net force to the substrate. So in this system, the sort of mechanical constraints are different. And it's known that they can synchronize, and basically people have looked at various mechanisms in the context of swimming cells and in the context of beating cilia. Hydrodynamics is one of them, and there are other mechanisms that people have looked at as well. Okay, so this is just basically talking about the kind of realization that we will have for this dynamical variable. So as you can see, in this system, we will have many of these, so a lattice of these, or let's say if you take the continuum limit, a two-dimensional system in which we have basically phi of r and t, and then we have local coupling, so we will basically be able to write a model with the coupling between them that will describe the dynamics of this phase over space and time. And you can have waves and things like that. So this is basically one side of the story. And then we go to active matter, which is usually it starts from the top, and we write phenomenological equations in which we basically only use symmetries and define order parameters, and we say we're interested in that kind of symmetry, and we want to know when it breaks and when it's spontaneously broken, and things like that. And so far, so in the sort of 10-15 year period in which people have looked at active matter from the top, from phenomenological level, basically people haven't reached the point yet to describe phase as one of these order parameters until recently. And there have been a couple of papers basically in the last 6 months or so looking at that, basically starting from previous work which looked at coupling between these objects and somehow coarse-graining into a description that you can actually write down at a phenomenological level. So these works are done. One of them is done by Shyam Ramaswamy and Sebastian Fruithauer. And the other one is done by Marco Leoni and Tani Liverpool. And I believe Tani will talk about his work on Friday. So, and I was hoping he would be here for today, but he's actually flying right now. He hasn't landed, and obviously he's not here. But he will give his talk, so we will hear about his work. Anyway, but, sorry?
Next Friday, not tomorrow.
So that's the idea. Basically, we have the two limits going from microscale up and then going from macroscale down, if you want, so continuum theories. Going down by just treating order parameters and dealing with symmetries and writing down generic equations. So that's basically where we can start the discussion, I think, and talk about various questions and also talk about, you know, how we can join these things together, what kind of, what can we learn when we start from this level and we go down, and what can we learn from this level and up. What are the type of questions we can try to address? What is the, you know, zoology that we're dealing with? How many different things we can see and we can describe and we can expect, et cetera, and, you know, how we can basically complete the story which is happening in between here. So, please.
Exactly. So what do we want to know?
So what do we want to know? Okay, so there are different things. From a phenomenological point of view, I think we would like to know whether this phase, this dynamical variable can break the symmetry and become globally, basically acquire a globally non-zero value, which means that all of a sudden you have all these active agents in the system depending on dimensionality and the parameters, whether there's boundary or not, and so on, whether the interaction is long range or short range, all these things, all of a sudden they become synchronized.
But then you need more than one cell, right?
Yes, true. So basically, for a continuous theory, you're looking at a suspension or a tissue, let's say, in which you have some kind of dynamical phase going on, and then the coupling between them could be local or non-local, etc.
Like mesoscale synchronization or something. This would be microscale, and then
yes. So even I mean, so we know from our lungs that the synchronization could also happen. Actually, it's not clear whether at the real sort of length scale of our lungs we do have a complete synchronization, or we just have because these could all beat in the same direction, let's say, and transport fluid and mucus, which is viscoelastic, etc. But also they could do this. They could synchronize and do the same thing. So they could align. That's one degree of freedom, which is like nematic ordering. And they could also synchronize. And if they synchronize, they would actually do something extra, because if you imagine you have a layer like that, and then you have the cilia doing this on a piece of mucus. Okay, this is really pushing it now in the Theoretical Physics Institute, but you want to push something like that, right? And maybe the elasticity is a problem. Maybe you need to fluidize it or exert stresses that would make it move easier. And that way, I think the idea that you could have phase coherence in the beating, which means that guys here will push in this direction and guys here will push in the reverse direction, effectively applying these shear stresses and things like that in a coordinated fashion, might have some relevance to exactly how this is happening.
I mean, they do really, don't they? Because of metachronal waves. That's really.
Yes, so we know that metachronal waves basically do happen. So that's a, okay, so what I was talking about was global synchronization. Waves will be basically synchronization in a way that not only you pick up a frequency, but also you pick up a wave vector, and then you have these traveling waves, which is.
But it's sort of this synchronization, because they all have to know what the others are doing.
So exactly. So it's in the same class of coupling. And we do know that exists. I don't think there is a systematic study of how long that, you know, in terms of length scale, up to what length scale you will have that kind of order or wave. Is it just something which happens at intermediate mesoscale? And then, you know, is it just a collection of random waves that have a relatively large coherence length, or is it something that could exist in the macroscopic sense, in the sense of a stable phase in a dynamical sense?
And some of these things are genetically encoded.
Absolutely.
And I happen to work on the mouse ventricle with somebody, you know, ventricle in the brain, where salivary fluid is being pumped around by cilia.
Yes, it's the same thing.
And the patterns that you see in the third ventricle are actually conserved from mouse to mouse to mouse to mouse. And it's a very complicated flow pattern, which I don't understand why the mouse would do that. But so the question is, if I have the motor, I mean, the question is, once you have the cilia, what they do, right?
Yeah, that is
true. The question is, how do they do it? I guess this is what you're talking about now, right?
Yeah.
So how would the cilia, even seen from an individual cilium, how would it cooperate with the others to do some function, right?
Yes, that's correct.
There are two sort of theories, aren't there? One is that it's hydrodynamic coupling, and one is that it's driven some way by the substrate. The latest on that is that people think it's actually happening.
There's a question whether these waves are just excitations, I mean, this response to some stimulus, or is there a real Hopf bifurcation and it goes through a Lehmann cycle and
they can appear in a self-sustained way and spontaneously, yes.
I think they can. Right. I think you can show that hydrodynamics can couple them enough to give you those sorts of waves.
So you actually have a Hopf bifurcation and go through a Lehmann cycle, you can do that?
Why would it be a Lehmann cycle if you had a traveling wave?
I'm just asking about a traveling wave in the sense that if you have a wave can be a response to a stimulus, right?
Yes.
It can be a response to a noise.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be a spontaneously generated wave.
But yeah, okay. I think you can see them as a spontaneously generated wave.
We can wave with numbers that you can predict or something.
So I think what Julia is referring to is if you have a system in which basically the beating is already decided that it will happen in a certain way which breaks the symmetry, then you will have a wave which will basically survive. You can show that hydrodynamics can do that, and sort of elastic coupling of the substrate can do that, and you know, which is actually responsible or dominant will have to, you know, you have to do experiments and try to change these parameters.
So one question I would like to know as a material scientist or somebody for my mouse, for example, I would like to know how efficient a pump is this? This is definitely an interesting question for me because I need to know how well it mixes, what it actually does. So I need to know.
Absolutely. That's
if I have my little motor in there and I have these cilia, what do they actually, because in the brain, for example, there's another flow, which I actually don't know, it turns out, because these things are cut open and so on. But there's in the brain, the old folklore that I found the literature is that people think that due to the blood pressure that's going up, your brain is compressed. Mm-hmm. And when it's being compressed, it basically squeezes out the salivary fluid. And then when it goes out again, it doesn't all come back. It just somehow gets new one comes in. And so slowly and steadily, you're pumping it out. The other one is gravitational pull. And then to our surprise, it turned out that the flow velocities are quite high in of the salivary fluid due to these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a very strange plumbing that you would never do if it's a pressure-driven flow. You would just not do it. I mean, no sane plumber would plumb up the brain the way it's plumbed. I mean, the cavities are plumbed up. You know, you would not make a pipe where the top cilia beat in this direction and the bottom cilia beat in that direction. You wouldn't make a pipe like that. You wouldn't make a...
Well, it depends what you want to pipe, I guess.
Right. Well, if you want to pipe the stuff back and
you want
forward
to pipe
in the same pipe, then you put one pipe
which is non-Newtonian and, you know, complex.
Well, the salivary fluid is not so non-Newtonian. It's actually pretty, you know, just a liquid, I mean, as far as I know. Actually, good point. I should look. I haven't done it.
I think the pumping has increased the efficiency by the metachronal waves.
It is, right?
But I only think on the level I remember reading it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can show that.
Mm-hmm. And so, at the end of the day, if you want to, it would be, these models should be...
You can also study, for example, do you want these things to be close to one another, or...
If you space them at a certain distance.
Well, people have done that. There's been loads of simulations by Andrei Filfan.
Andrei?
Vilfan, V-I-L-F-A-N.
Vilfan, okay.
Yeah. With some very nice simulations, you know, these are the lines of
there's also some recent work by Gerhard Gunther's group in UN.
I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I was just going to add to Eberhard's point that the one thing I heard from a medical doctor was that basically these cells have their primary cilia basically when they attach to form these tissue layers, the orientation is already decided. And one of the genetic reasons that we have asthma and things like that is that these cilia might be genetically oriented in the wrong way. And this is a quench disorder, it's fixed. It cannot fix itself. So you will have a patient which basically has this cilia or every other cilium or something like that beating in the wrong plane, which cannot coordinate with this one, which will be basically beating in this plane and beating in that plane.
Just an interesting side remark. In the mice that my colleagues are investigating, it turns out that a REM sleep mouse has a different cilia flow pattern than a mouse that's not in REM sleep. Mm-hmm. And so it seems that this is much more dynamically controlled. So the flow pattern changes completely. It's much more disordered when the mouse is in deep sleep, if the mouse is awake, so to speak. Well, not anymore, but you know, if you harvest the brain, so to speak, of a mouse that's in deep sleep or in awake sleep, and then the pattern is actually quite disordered in when you're in deep sleep. We don't know what that means, right? But what that means is there must be some way of
yeah, so that could come the from the way this stroke cycle works, for example.
You pick up harmonics in the stroke cycle,
which are different, or change the shape, for example, the way it goes out of the normal plane when it goes back, the recovery stroke might be different. And it's the difference between the friction coefficient.
So you say they could still be aligned the same way, but it could be just the way.
Yeah, so that's the stability. So that's in our language, it's a quench disorder, which means when it is like that, it will always be like that. From born genetically, this will always be wrong. And to align it, you have to change the DNA by gene delivery.
Do they really, is this really meant to be what causes asthma?
So this is a big contribution. You know, I can give you the name of the doctor in London who told me that. He's from the old, what's that hospital in the children's hospital?
Marston.
No, in London, it's called Old, well, it's...
Anyway.
It's a person who works on basically this type of. I heard him talk in a meeting on cilia, so
supposedly people that have get a water.
They don't think about it like this. This is my interpretation. Maybe it's not quite right.
It'd be easy to do the modeling for that. And
yeah, it would be easy to do the modeling.
It would be a lot of fun. Even with a simple model, it'd be fun.
Even with
a
simple model, absolutely.
Made, yeah.
Now, for example, you can see how many of these misaligned cilia you need to kill the coherence on the microscopic scale. Exactly. So that's the kind of thing that should be done.
Mm-hmm. You can even write the continuum theory for this, including quench disorder.
You can do that too. Yes, that's correct.
Because the continuum theory for these things exists now.
Yes, continuum theory exists. Now we need to go to that discussion as well. So I think continuum theories basically tell us a lot about how things become dynamic. And there are so the first thing you do when you write a continuum theory is you try and put in as much ingredient as possible. And the second thing that happens is you start getting instabilities. And these instabilities basically tell you how things will evolve from the normal, uniform, average state that you have put in. And as far as I know from these recent works, basically these systems, similar to all the other active systems, will start to pick up instabilities as well. And that means on large macroscopic scale, probably you cannot maintain simple, globally sort of ordered states very easily. But at the mesoscale, you will be able to have things that will basically create patterns and excitations and waves and simultaneously order, say, polar order and things like that.
Also, interestingly, the completely asynchronous state is also unstable in most parts of the completely asynchronous state.
Okay, in the model by Shriram.
Shriram, it's mostly in most parts of the phase diagram, it's completely unstable.
So which particular continuum theory are we worried about?
Do you want to go to the board and build it, or? I had a look at it this morning. I don't think I can reproduce it on the board. It's not as easy as the Landau expression with a few parameters. So.
Yeah, it's not really easy. I'll try. I might get it completely wrong, though. For any pole, I can write a post dipole as. So earlier I used to write a post dipole as. Just this, right? That essentially meant that I was averaging over the phase variable, internal phase variable. I was thinking that it was completely asynchronous, and I was averaging over it. Mm-hmm. However, I can actually put for every particle, I can put in a phase variable with some coefficient, like this. This is the internal phase variable which is creating the force dipole. Now, if I look at, if I write the hydrodynamic theory in terms of this guy here, if I keep the velocity conservation, I'll just have velocity and the theta. If I write this in terms
Maybe you missed it when you just mentioned, but could you maybe repeat what the SI, the theta, and the Q are?
SI is just a coefficient. Mm-hmm. It's a strength, which can depend on theta. And theta
is... S is the stroke cycle. It's supposed to reproduce the basically the cycle that is
occurring. Okay. Mm-hmm. And theta. Q alpha theta is a pneumatic order parameter. So now I can build a theory. I can write down the velocity equation and an equation for this guy.
So are we assuming are we assuming that Q is just a pneumatic or something?
It's a pneumatic order parameter. It's basically till now here it's a single particle description.
Yeah.
So it's just the PI PJ.
Yeah, I'm just worried about whether it's going to have an equation of motion.
No, it will not have an equation of motion, at least in this calculation.
Right.
It'll just be frozen at a constant value.
I think in the paper by Shriram, they haven't looked at that
dynamics.
Tani and Marco Leone, they looked at both of them varying.
But they don't have dynamics.
But they don't have dynamics, and they haven't derived with the same style as they have.
But
so there are differences and similarities.
So now we can actually write down a theory for these objects. And when you do that, you can show that you can have an equation for this object here, or that we're first bringing the averages. And so when you do that, the first order function you get is the Kuramoto order parameter. So you have a coupled equation of the velocity and the Kuramoto order parameter.
Mm-hmm.
And you can show that as soon as you have that, the asynchronous state is unstable for most parts of the phase diagram. And the globally synchronous state is also unstable in most parts of the phase diagram. There's a tiny window.
I'm sorry, I'm confused about where the activity ends up coming in, because I'm used to having gradients in Q driving a flow field.
So here it's not the gradients in Q, but the gradients in the swimming stroke, which is...
So I need gradients in theta.
You need gradients in theta.
Drive a flow field.
The gradients in the...
You still have force dipole.
You still have force dipole.
Are proportional to theta.
Yeah. So you need a gradient in the Kuramoto order parameter.
Yes, okay.
That will drive your flow.
It's like saying two swimmers are trotting along with different phases.
Yes, and that then they synchronize. And
That's a big assumption. You're assuming they'll synchronize.
No, I'm not assuming they'll synchronize. I'm starting my equation in swimmers, which each have their own side duty cycle or whatever. And I'm building up the coarse grained averages, the coarse grained equations of those swimmers using my closure approximations. Okay, I haven't done any of this, so I should say hi.
They.
Yes. And then I'm writing the equations, and then I'm showing, they showed that the globally asynchronous state is unstable. So there will be some synchronization. So that is already there in the theory. I'm not assuming that. And and then what they showed is they took a globally synchronized state, an infinite is in, I mean, that also is unstable. So there'll be clumping, I mean, there'll be synchronized. In fact, what this can lead to is, this can lead to noisy waves. Because what can happen then is, you know, different parts of the thing will be synchronized, but it will be like a Kuramoto-Shivashinsky kind of a turbulence, which in this case, because there are coupled variables, can give you a wave-like distortion.
I still don't quite understand what's... Can you write down the term which couples V and theta?
Okay. I'll let you get the equations.
Oh, maybe I should just go away and look it up. But it's, a long time ago, we did a simulation of two swimmers with an internal phase variable.
That the oscillatory beats?
Well, it was a Raman sort of swimmers. And what we did is make it so that the relative phases can change relative to each other.
But then you could get different dynamics based on the initial conditions.
Okay, so if I have a Kuramoto order parameter, which is then my sigma active will be some coefficient W.
So this is the active stress?
Yes, you have prevented. And this is fixed.
Could you say what everything is again? I mean,
this is the Kuramoto order parameter, this is the pneumatic order parameter, and this is some strength algorithm. Which may depend on this bit, which will depend on this
bit. I think what Enschleder and I are both trying to ask is, what's this got to do with real swimmers swimming along? And we know that if you just have two swimmers, they will synchronize because of the hydrodynamic interactions between them. I mean, maybe not always, but yeah. So
if you have n swimmers swimming along, you don't know whether all of them synchronize.
No, we don't.
So basically, this is a Korsgren theory, which is telling you that probably they're not synchronized.
Yeah, so from the work that you did, the simulation, we know that they're very sensitive, I mean, how they scatter off from one another, they're sensitive to the phase difference between them and the actual orientation. So
yeah, because the dipole field changes from place to place in a rather complicated way. And so they're not going to synchronize the same if they're like that or if they're like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah. So then there's at the sort of macroscopic level, you will need to deal with the same question. Start with these order parameters that describe the orientation, and that will be a field which at any location will give you on average roughly what the orientation of the swimmers have. And then you have a phase, which is a smooth.
It's here in the sense that you assume that the queue is globally ordered. So you have assumed that all the swimmers are like this.
Aha, right.
So this is what you have assumed. You have put it into the theory.
Yeah, so there's one thing, you know, one analysis they have done with the theory, but once you construct that theory, you can do other things with it, and you can ask other questions. In principle, when you are at the global scale, you will have a smooth director type field, and you will have a smooth phase type field, and they will have couplings because of the mechanics, and you have to basically put in information about what is it that you're studying. Is it a swimmer that looks like that, or a swimmer that looks like that, a pusher, a puller, and how, what kind of, is it chiral, is it not? You know, all of these things are going to matter. And then when you have that, you can ask questions about, you know, whether, when all of them are aligned, all of them can be in phase. When they're all in phase, can they be aligned? Things like that, these are linear stability type question. You start from an assumption, you perturb it, and see if the modes you get are stable or not. And that's as far as basically things have been pushed so far, with basically one or two of these questions.
Also, actually, there is a more interesting thing, because we already know that just with Q, the global dynamics is unstable always, with hydrodynamics. So what happens if you put the phase in there? Because there will be now a competition. We know that in local regions it will be stable. The Q is in one direction. So there, does the phase become unstable still? So it's a competition of length scales now. Now this theta essentially gives you another extra length scale that you can Q.
So we don't know the answer to the question.
So you don't know.
I mean.
Thanks.
Yes.
Yeah, and then
Simplicity rate of variation, we can define, suppose, a Coasian variable theta, and that varies slowly over the entire of whatever body. Why would you expect it to be unstable? Because, I mean, does this mean that the hydrodynamics is such that we make the pneumatic unstable?
No.
I mean, you said that even for synchronized or asynchronized, if
I think this is a result of a calculation, right? I'm not sure we have an easy
intervention. It's never unstable. The Q is fixed.
Mm-hmm. Q is fixed,
yes.
Okay.
Q is frozen.
What becomes unstable then?
The theta and the V equation, ultimately that becomes unstable. So basically so you start with a thing where everyone is beating the same way, mm-hmm. and then they'll spontaneously go into a state where some are beating in one way and others are
So is it because of the whole coupling in chimera states or not? This is not that.
Chimera states, okay, this is my opinion, I don't know if it's correct. Chimera states, I think, are, so if you write these equations down, they look, you know, they have nonlinear couplings and they have the zero vector being unstable. So if you have these kind of equations, generically, what do you know from Kurama-Shoshensky equation? You have two kinds of states. One is where if you have a short, small system, you have a non-homogeneous solution, which is not flat, non-homogeneous solution, but which is stable, which doesn't change with time. That solution is called a cellular solution. So I think the cellular solution for these kind of things is the chimera state.
There's also precedence. I mean, we've done some numerical simulations, and in a system in which linear stability analysis tells us that we should have a stable solution, we always see these spiral waves that look like the chimera state or the Jabotinsky type.
In
basically a system of cilia which has some chirality in it. So that's a fixed system, and we don't have a continuum theory. We start building up the interaction from these beads that move around close trajectories, but we see all these waves basically as the only sort of thing that you get in the simulation, which we don't quite understand, but it's compatible with what Anio is saying, which is something which is basically driven by instabilities from either corner. And so what Anio is emphasizing is that the asynchronous state is unstable, which means if you just have a continuum theory for something like E. coli and ignore the phase, you know, probably you're not getting all of the stuff.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is quite significant because that means everything, you know, we have as intuition will need to be addressed. Yeah. So sorry,
I don't know if there is a difference in semantic, but in my field certainly you have waves, and there is quench disorder. We will try to localize.
Okay, that's.
I don't know if this is relevant here or not.
Absolutely, because it would be the same thing if you had quench disorder with, you know, in such a busy, active system, it's very likely that you would get even richer things like basically localization and length scale.
This has not been studied.
No, this is a fairly recent development in our field. Well, I mean, this type of thing has been ongoing for a long time, but to actually try and do something about, you know, interaction between many of them at the large scale where they all see each other, this is a fairly recent development.
I vaguely remember that what happens if you have two like that is that they want to end up pi out of phase. And so you can immediately see if they're all trying to be pi out of phase, you're back to a sort of spin glass type.
Yeah.
Frustration. I can't remember. Maybe it's pullers of pi out of phase and pushers of in phase or something like that. I don't know. Did it come out any different with pushers and pullers?
No.
No.
Because the Q is fixed.
What's that got to do with it? Q is fixed.
It isn't right. It's wrong.
We have lots of parameters, so I guess it's possible that you go to one corner and get.
Yeah. I can't quite remember what we ended up with.
So yeah, that will be encoded in the W parameter there, sitting there. So.
So could you maybe suggest a couple of references to Soropia from the waves localization problem that you mentioned? put them in the discussion so we can look them up.
I mean, I can do it in 1 hour. Only what you want is localization of classical waves. So
okay, so in random media, localization of waves in random media.
With electrons is the key point in our field. I mean, it's electronics is based on localization. And light also localized. It's more difficult to localize light than electron wave functions. But
yes, I think I know a few papers about profiling crystals with disorder, with dislocation, and things like that. Could localize light. Or, well, attempt to localize.
And some waves have been also localized. So and then in two dimensions. This depends very much on dimensionality, but electrons in two dimensions are always localized. Mm-hmm. So I would expect that if waves in two dimensions are very likely to get localized with a relatively small amount of disorder.
Why is cilia different from swimmers? I mean, I know cilia are stuck down, but I mean, do we understand why synchronization should be different in cilia to swimmers?
That's a good question. So there is really the biggest difference to me is the force field condition, which doesn't apply.
They're near a wall, so they can't just screened.
But they're probably not screened on the length scale of the cilia themselves, is it?
No. What's the length scale of the confinement?
So there are two effects. One is that this one is going to, so this is a force monopole, let's say, and it's going to see an image somewhere down here. And if you are far away, let's say, if you're a cilium up here, you see that as a dipole, actually. Which means that the field will be 1 over r cubed now instead of 1 over r. And basically, much weaker. And the tensorial structure will change as well, so the coupling will change. That's one thing, and the other thing is the force-free condition. So if you think about this object, basically when you're thinking about synchronization of this and that, effectively what is driving this and that is somehow correlated through the body they are attached with, because if you apply a force, let's say F1 or F left, on this one, and of course, right on that one, then this one is under the influence of minus FL minus FR, which is basically going to fluctuate or oscillate with the same phase. So this one is going through a cycle with a phase, that one is going through a cycle with another phase, and these two phases are trying to synchronize, but they also interact with something else, which is going through with the same phases. And that adds a coupling at a very short distance compared to, say, interaction between...
But I think what Julia is asking, correct me, it's not the synchronization between one swimmer, it's between two different swimmers that are each swimming with a different pace. So...
Okay, I see.
That
so then
essentially is a...
Then it will...
It's an oscillating dipole.
Think E. coli. Can you say again what about the flow fields of this thing? I mean, if it's tied down to a surface, isn't it acting as a Stokes slit?
So if it's tied down to the surface, it means that basically it's a force monopole. But
right.
What
so
I'm saying,
its image, it will be a dipole again.
Because of the image, that's true.
So it's still 1/r².
Yes. So my point about phase was that this object, you know, if you look at it from, let's say, you cut it only. You take a quarter of it, let's say, and you look at it from the top. When it's at this point in the cycle, compared to when it's at this point, compared to when it's at this point, compared to when it's at that point, these are different configurations.
Yeah.
When you average them all and say this is just the force that is pumping fluid in this direction, you're doing time averaging. But in reality, the phase will affect the flow field, because this segment pushing the fluid like that, when it has come here, it will be pushing the fluid like that. So this effect will be felt if you don't time average.
Yeah.
Right. So that was my point about the flow field. Otherwise, basically, it's
but I don't quite see why that's different to a cilia.
What do you mean different? So in what sense? I mean, I think there are occasional differences, for example, whether you're considering things that are closer than their own size or farther away than, or whether it's type image or not.
I think the question I'm asking, would you write down the same continuum theory for cilia as you would for swimmers?
I would, except that instead of force dipoles, I would put force monopoles. But
then there's the surface.
Yes. So then you can put the surface as well. It's a different type of force dipole. So this is a force dipole of this kind. So it's a force dipole of this kind.
Mm-hmm.
And the cilium is a force dipole of this kind. Because you see, force is a charge, which means its dipole is a tensor.
Yeah.
And you could build it
in
two different ways. So that's different from electrostatics.
Yeah.
Apart from that, there is no difference in the continuum. So this is a dipole which is separated perpendicular to the force.
So then in the continuum theory,
so how
it should be able to see much.
It will tell you how you contract the indices of this
continuum theory.
Yeah.
If you drop momentum conservation and put in the correct boundary condition at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
I think you should get the cilia, the case for cilia, because that's what happens. And the way to go get a confined fluid equation of the Regel, Strand, and all is basically to just drop the momentum conservation term and integrate over the second dimension. So I think that should give you the CDA equation. But then what will happen is, because you have dropped momentum conservation, you'll actually get 1 over r cubed, not 1 over r squared. Right?
Are you sure the length scales are such that, I mean, normally people, I think, don't use green hydrodynamics when they're looking at cilia. I think.
What is the scale of
I mean, the distance between cilia must be microns?
Well, it depends on the system, but there are dense ones and there are dilute ones.
Yes.
So. I mean, I would say you can construct the appropriate continuum theory using a similar style for cilia.
Yeah, just as well as swimming.
Bacteria is just the way you impose the. The underlying sort of structure of the forces and boundaries.
Mm.
And I don't think they have looked at boundaries. I think, like any active matter continuum theory, as soon as you have boundaries, you'll have other things going on, because these are all correlations are all long range. They will feel the boundary immediately, and the boundary condition will set things, flows and vortices and things like that. Maybe the waves.
Looking at an active system, when do you know that you have to take this variable into account? Because many of the active matter problems, you don't really take this into account, right? So
yes, you're right. So there are two ways to talk about this. One is that in any phenomenological theory, really, there is no prescription to tell you what order parameter to choose. That really comes to the intuition that you have, and you know, you think about the experiment and what you're trying to describe, and you basically put down what you think will give you the best concise way of describing that.
If you write down a minimal model, say, and see that, basically, does it mean that you're doing the averaging in a way that over time scale that phase matters or doesn't matter?
No, it's not like that. So, and the second thing is, there is no way to tell that when I have chosen, let's say, these two fields, if there is a third one, that will always be guaranteed not to affect it. So, for example, you know, you could introduce another one and show that what you get is very different, and there's no way to average it out. So, personally, I've always felt that ignoring phase was wrong, and you can find this in my papers as early as 2000 or 2001. I've always written this. I've never constructed the actual theory, but I've always written that continuum theory without phase is not the full story, because I believe in, you know, all these tiny effects will have significant consequences. And there might be other things we are ignoring at the moment which will change the whole
So are you saying that if we average the phase over a cycle, you don't get to the equations that we write down ignoring the phase variable.
But if it's true that the asynchronous state is unstable,
then you don't.
Because it's like the fixed point you're studying for other reasons is unstable in a direction that you have not looked into, say, your perpendicular direction. So anything you're looking at in that cross section holds for that cross section, but as soon as you go away from that, you'll have other things.
So as long as this introduces extra instability to the system, you cannot just simply average it out. Or can we actually write down a theory and average this out and see what the equations look like compared to what you mean? Can you actually average
it? But you can average something, you can set it to zero, you will get the equation that you had before. But the question is, if you have a little bit of it, will it be stable towards that perturbation or not? And if the answer is no, it's not stable, then it will take you away from that fixed point. Still, if you can tune the system to live in that fixed point, you will describe that it is correct.
I think what Leone and Liverpool show is that if you have a polar order parameter and this theta, the Kuramoto order parameter, it is unstable, so you cannot throw it away.
So I have questions on different directions. You're saying that the trajectory that the CD makes is 3D. How much of a difference does that make? Because a lot of the models just assume 2D. Movement.
Yes. So again, depends on the question you're asking. So the reason the trajectory is 3D, I think, from looking at what happens when you. So this is my own intuition. I'm not sure it is the full picture. But there are two elements. One is breaking the symmetry going between one half cycle and the other one. And the second element is basically taking advantage of difference in the friction coefficient when you are very close to the surface and when you are very far from the surface. Mm-hmm. And you can break the symmetry in a way that you don't take advantage of that. Right? Let's say if you have a trajectory which is ellipsoidal and parallel to the surface.
Yes.
You can go one half cycle like that and return one half cycle like that, but distance with the surface can be kept fixed. This will give you something, but it won't give you what we observe from ceiling. It won't give you the full story. So there's this element also that they take advantage of the fact that there's a lot more friction when you go back from near the surface compared to when you go from the top. Now, if you combine the two, it's very likely to go out of plane. And also, when you break the symmetry and you go out of plane, there's this additional thing which basically getting synchrony is easier when things are not, when they are less symmetric. So if you have two objects, let's say that move around circular trajectories, and then you have many symmetries, for example, you have mirror symmetry with respect to the midplane, you have mirror symmetry with respect to that, and then you have symmetries for the trajectories themselves. You can show that it's this puts less constraint on the dynamics of what is moving around the trajectory than when you have something which is like that, basically opposite something which is, let's say, also like that. That doesn't have all those symmetries, which means that the system will be forced to go to the synchronized state, let's say, more easily. Again, that's just intuition.
I guess the question I am asking, so if I have a, so even if the CDI is moving in 3D, is it covering a sphere completely? I mean, at the surface of the, is the tip of the CDI covering a surface of the sphere completely? Because if it is not, then I can...
No, it's not. And this description that I'm sort of implying, which is basically you can model the whole cilium by a bead, this is just an effective description. And it's useful because you can do analytical work with it and so on. But in reality, obviously the shape of the cilium itself is changing when it's going through the cycle. But one thing we can ask is, for example, whether you can define a fixed set of conformations for the psyllium, which is basically given no matter what is happening around it. For example, you could have two psyllia very close to one another. They go through the same cycle of conformations compared to when they are very far from one another. And I think at the moment people just make assumptions that when they are close to one another, the shapes are not changed that much, because basically the shapes are decided based on local dynamics, internal dynamics of the molecular motors, so the actuation of the 9 plus 2 axoneme and things like that. And that is likely not to be affected too much by, let's say, the hydrodynamic flow field. The limit cycle that is picked in that nonlinear dynamical system for the oscillator is likely to be affected, you know, not very strongly by these perturbations, but the phase variable is very soft. It can change very, it can go through that cycle very quickly or very slowly. That doesn't matter because that is, you know, it's a soft mode of the system. So that's, at the moment, it's what people assume in these models.
So two cilia being close together and the shape changing, that would change the continuum theory, right? I mean, you cannot just have a, I mean, how do you then talk of the phase variable? Because it's
yes, so if the shape changes depending on the distance between them, then you will need to modify it to incorporate that. That will be a more difficult. I mean, even at this level, it's very difficult to describe.
Then you also have to have a shape parameter into the theory.
But it's possible to assume something and then examine its relevance. Let's say expand around something and see whether that's stable or not. If you make a perturbation, does it go back to its original shape or not? It might be possible to do something.
Intuitively, you think that shape, if this kind of dynamics is more complicated, would it change the results of this particular?
The continuum theory. Mm-hmm. The continuum theory presumably has these phenomenological coefficients, and the input here is the stroke cycle, which basically is a function, nonlinear function of the phase, which is, you know, it's the same for all the agents, but it's an unknown cyclic function. As long as you keep that generic enough, I think it should accommodate everything.
So, another question. So I'm looking at that active stress when introduced the phase. Mm-hmm. So if the system is synchronized, it seems that this phase, a derivative of phase, is the constant, right? In that case, this reduces to the normal pneumatic, active pneumatic system without phase, right? So from that equation. If this active stress is proportional to the phase derivative of the time times pneumatic. So if it's synchronized, then if the synchronized state is stable.
This is theta dot.
Right? Is that? I'm just looking at that, right?
So if theta is constant, theta dot is zero, so that then drops out.
But the phase, right? But the derivative of phase, if synchronized, then the derivative of phase is a constant or is that zero?
This is a slow variable of the phase. So if it's synchronized, I think this is supposed to be zero. Am I right?
Then there's no active stress.
As long as you don't have a Q alpha beta yet. As long as you.
Oh, okay. Then that's back to the questions before. But how to understand that? Meaning, if everything is synchronized, that each individual unit is still an active agent, right?
How it's probably one contribution.
One contribution.
Oh, okay, just one.
Yeah, for example,
but you also know from the old active pneumatic theory that if you have everything in one direction, you don't have an active strip. You don't have this thing.
Right. So that comes from the gradient of this Q.
So it's a gradient. Hydrate. Divergence of Q gives you the flow, not Q itself.
Okay. So on top of this active stress, due to this degree of freedom of this internal phase, you still gotta put in that traditional piece of gradient of QIJ in that model, right?
You should in principle, but it's not there in the work of Sriram and Sebastian, but it is there in Leoni and Liverpool. But there is no hydrodynamics, of course, so things are different.
There's another question which might be fun, which is forget about time evolution, just have a load of swimmers with phases either zero or pi and ask what happens, because they might phase separate.
Yes, that's a good question. So basically, so that's the opposite approach to this. So they have fixed Q and looked at the dynamics of that. You can fix the dynamics of the phase, or basically freeze the phase and look at the dynamics of density and other parameter. They can phase separate, they can orient, or
I don't know what they do.
Yeah. It is coming down from simulation, also from continuity theory level as well. I think they haven't looked at this.
I think a long time ago we sort of did that, and they did phase separate, but I think we probably did our simulations all wrong, so I'm not sure we believed it. But it might be best, nice to go back to it now, people know better what they...
I think in general, people haven't looked at populations of active matter with different intrinsic properties that much, and there's a lot of room to work in that area. Phase contrast is one thing, other things also could be considered. Phase is probably going to be very significant because if the sizes are different or the force dipoles are different and so on, it's maybe a mixture of pushers and pullers will be as dramatic as this one. So this is really.
We tend just react as a weaker pushers function.
So do you get phase separation or no?
No, everything just gets mixed.
Also interesting in this context would be the kind of systems that Christina worries about, in which the propulsion is along, there's a directional propulsion, but steric interaction is isotropic. So there are circular particles or spherical particles which are moving, which can move.
Okay.
So these systems are what she calls the polar ripple systems. And in that, what happens if you put in the phase variation? So there won't be a pneumatic ordering because of the straight interactions ever. And they may not even order in the standard sense if you have a dilute enough system.
I think from a microscopic picture, it's a bit tricky to imagine what can cause that. What there might be something. Maybe this is very close.
This is very cool, close to that, yeah.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the spherical disks with no alignments, right?
Yes.
Actually, well, you can still put in some kind of the interaction. If you have a proper interaction that can induce alignment, then you can still have this polar state even with the spherical disks. For example,
let's not have an alignment interaction.
Right.
So then what? So if you're putting in an alignment interaction, you're basically saying that it will align this way.
Sure.
So, but then that is not really a this kind of system I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, basically the yeah, I know what you mean, but I think for the swimmers, if you have hydrodynamic interactions that can induce alignments, even though they by themselves are spherical, it can still be treated as a porous system.
I agree.
And the opposite is true as well, because if you look into near field effects when swimmers get close to each other, they misalign or basically they push each other out of the alignment. So they're both effects depending on the distance. These are all interesting questions. Okay, so are we running out of questions? So, okay, did you get enough to put on the... Ah, okay, so that's a paper. How many authors?
Well, thank you.